Happy Friday, everybody. Welcome to the Michael Cutler Hour. I am your host, Michael Cutler. August 15th, 2014. The year is flying by. The summer is flying by. And I have to make note of the fact that we are rapidly approaching, hard as it is to believe, the 13th anniversary of the terror attacks of September 11th, 2001. I welcome you to my program, as I always like to note. It's wonderful catching up with you at the end of the week. It's been a hell of a week, but not unusual in this dangerous, wacky era where there is such a vacuum in leadership and decency coming from Washington that you can almost hear the sucking sound made by that intense vacuum. And the world is paying the price, not just America. And we need leadership, but unfortunately, we're not finding much. And the purpose of this program, of course, as those of you who are regular listeners know, is for me to provide you with the knowledge, the experience, the perspectives that my 30-year career with the old Immigration and Naturalization Service has provided me with. I had an interesting career. Got to go on almost all the rides, as the saying goes. I was an immigration inspector for 4 years. I was an adjudications officer for a year doing those marriage interviews like you've seen in the movies. And I spent 26 years as a special agent with the old INS. And for half of those 26 years, actually more than half of those years, I was assigned to the war on drugs, first with a almost four-year stint with the Unified Intelligence Division of the DEA in New York, the Drug Enforcement Administration, and then I was promoted to Senior Special Agent and assigned to the Organized Crime Drug Enforcement Task Force, and in my assignments I worked intimately with the FBI, DEA, ATF, the Israeli National Police, the Canadians, the Brits, even got a very nice award from the Japanese government for working with them on a cocaine smuggling investigation that I assisted with. So I've truly had the opportunity to take the scenic route. And then in addition to my perspectives as an agent, I've done a whole bunch of congressional hearings. I think the number we're up to now is 16. I've been before the House. I've been before the Senate. I've been called by both sides of the aisle. I've been before legislative hearings around the country. And my mission, and I have accepted it, because it's a self-imposed mission, unlike Mr. Phelps, who was handed an assignment, is to provide America, Americans, and our alleged leaders with an honest perspective on immigration. And honesty and politicians go about as well together these days as oil and water, but especially where immigration is concerned, there's so little truth to be found, so little honesty to be found, so little integrity to be found. And that is the general thrust of the program, although, again, those of you who are regular listeners know that sometimes we go off in different tangents and I bring on guests to talk about a host of issues, although generally my focus is national security related. Today, though, I will be flying solo. There is much to talk about, and I decided to spend my evening or my hour and a half, however long we run tonight, simply having a conversation with you. You are obviously always welcome to call in. The phone number is 310-982-4145, 310-982-4145. But to get started, I want to remind all of you that there are a couple of websites I would very much like for you to visit. Please go to the capsweb.org website, capsweb, C-A-P-S. Of course, that stands for Californians for Population Stabilization. I am a senior fellow with that organization. I have been writing for them for a bunch of years. They have been sounding the alarm, and not only about California. I know that when you hear the word California and you live in some other state, you think, well, this doesn't concern me. As we've seen, what happens in California affects the rest of the country. This is indeed a country of 50 United States. We are now united in the worst economic crisis since the Depression. We are now united with the worst heroin epidemic probably in the history of the United States. It is so severe that police departments from coast to coast and border to border have been issuing the antidote to heroin overdoses to their members. In all of my years, and I've been involved now with the immigration issue, it's hard for me to believe this, but for almost 43 years, this has never happened before. And that is really the true metric about border security or the lack thereof, because stop and think about it. While the arrest statistics are doctored, butchered, sorted, equivocated, twisted like a pretzel, what we can't, or what the administration can't do, is get away from the irrefutable fact that heroin has never been cheaper, heroin has been never more abundant on our city streets, and heroin is not produced in the United States. So the presence of every gram of heroin, the presence of every gram of cocaine in America provides graphic, irrefutable evidence of a failure of border security. So let's get it straight. There are no secure borders. With luck, our borders serve as little more than a speed bump to the determined smugglers, criminals, and worryingly terrorists. This is not a program for the faint of heart, but we need to have the truth. Unlike the Jack Nicholson character in A Few Good Men, it's not that you can't handle the truth. I believe you must have the truth, and increasingly it's almost impossible to get the truth from most of the mainstream media. I have been doing a lot of appearances of late on Newsmax TV, on One America News Network. I'm happy to be able to do Skype with both of those news organizations, both of those television networks from my home. I have also done several appearances over at Fox, Neil Cavuto, Lou Dobbs, and it's important to get the message out there. But increasingly, the news won't talk about it. The politicians won't talk about it, with a few noteworthy exceptions. And you know who my heroes in Washington are, and I make no bones about it. Congressman Steve King, Congressman Lou Barletta, my personal friend in Pennsylvania. If Lou is listening this evening, thank you for your dedication to our country. Senator Jeff Sessions from Alabama, Senator Chuck Grassley from Iowa. These are people who are true leaders, truly stand for something. Senator David Vitter, another great leader. There are some others. But goodness gracious, you have got to go far and wide to find them. Lindsey Graham, one of the eight gangsters, they call them the Gang of Eight, and I call them the Eight Gangsters, was a guy who still believes that it makes sense to provide millions of illegal aliens who snuck into our country and evaded the inspections process that's supposed to keep the bad guys out, believes that it makes sense to provide those folks with identity documents and lawful status, even though they violated our laws, even though there is no capacity to do face-to-face interviews or background investigations of consequence. What could possibly go wrong? So, and we're going to get into that today, and this is going to be the thrust of our discussion, of class and session today, boys and girls, if you will. But I also want to remind you about a couple of other quick websites. Of course, my own, michaelcutler.net, C-U-T-L-E-R, probably if you're listening to my voice, you're familiar with my website. I'm also now a regular columnist for Front Page Magazine, affiliated with the David Horowitz Freedom Center. This is their publication. And in fact, I'm excited at the prospect. I have been invited to address their Restoration Weekend coming up in November in Florida. I will be one of many speakers who will be in attendance participating. I will also be speaking in Pennsylvania on September 22nd. I will be in South Carolina with Armstrong Williams September the 8th, or I think it's September the 8th, and then September the 10th, some very exciting news, and there'll be more about this in my future programs, but I will be doing an hour of Sirius XM radio in conjunction with Armstrong Williams on Wednesday evenings from 7 until 8 p.m. each and every week. It's an amazing opportunity that Armstrong has so generously provided to me, and I plan to use that program, that hour every week, as an opportunity to reach even more people around the country, because we've got to get it right. We have got to get it right, and Washington is getting it wrong, and it's both sides of the aisle. My rage is someplace in the stratosphere, as yours should be also. There is absolutely no way that we can defend this country if we don't have secure borders. And our borders, by the way, are far more than the Rio Grande River that is supposed to separate the United States from Mexico, or that whole Mexican border. Is that border important? You betcha. Does it need to be secured? Absolutely. But when you look at the legislation to secure that border, what are we told? Well, border security to the politicians means 90% of operational control of the high traffic areas. Let me repeat that and see if you can scratch your head and make sense of it, because it leaves me befuddled and to be honest, pissed. Operational, 90% operational control of the high traffic areas. So who determines what's a high traffic area? What happens in the non-high traffic areas? And 90%, how do we know what percent? You know, when I listen to these arrest statistics, the Border Patrol arrests 1 in 3, 1 in 5, 1 in 9, 1 in 3 and a quarter, 1 in 2 and 7/8. How in the world do you know what you don't know? How do you know what you're not catching if you're not catching them? Is that not the dopiest thing you've ever heard? And people accept it. Oh, the Border Patrol catches 1 in 5. They catch 1 in 9, 1 in 8, 1 in 3. Who knows? These are guesstimates. These are guesstimates, folks. And this is not an academic conversation. This isn't about tweaking the actual speed of light, you know? Is it 186,320 miles an hour? Is it 186,319 miles an hour? The physicists and people that need that kind of exactitude, I know there are repercussions. But to the average person, 186,000 sounds good, and we're good to go. But when we're dealing with the potential for terrorists, I keep coming back to the statement that our own leaders have said, and most of them, quite frankly, lack mouth-ear coordination. Most of our alleged leaders can't hear what comes out of their own damn mouths. We've got to get it right 100% of the time, but the terrorists only got to get it right once. Okay, so based on that statement alone, how much wiggle room is there? How much wiggle room is there? How happy would you be getting on an airplane if you were told that they had a 95% safety record, and by the way, they fly 1,000 airplanes a day? So that means that a couple of airplanes are going to probably fall out of the sky every day. Nobody in their right mind would get on that airplane. And we're being told that the terrorists only got to be right once. We've got to be right 100%. And meanwhile, they want to have 90% border security, operational control. And I want to know what operational control means. I mean, this is worse than defining the word is. 90% operational control of the high traffic areas of the Mexican border. Unbelievable. And we come to take that for getting tough on immigration. What they should be striving for is we're going to seal the damn thing up so that it's tight as a drum and a mosquito can't get across. That's operational control, in my judgment. That's a secure border. Not saying these 4 miles here and these 8 miles there and these 9 miles there. No. You've got a border, and it needs to be made impermeable, period. No equivocation. And look at what we've done. There is no interior enforcement of the immigration laws. So if you accept the idea that nothing is 100%, and we can accept that, there will be a little bit of leakage. How do we mop up the leakage? And the answer is we don't. And we know that the 19 terrorists who attacked our country didn't run the border but came through ports of entry and then got lost in the shuffle. There are millions upon millions of illegal aliens in the United States who came into the country not by running the border but by entering through a port of entry, lying on a visa application, or coming in under the visa waiver program, which keeps on getting expanded and should be terminated, but for the National Chamber of Commerce and the Discover America Partnership organization, the Discover America program. I mean, unbelievable. They seem to have forgotten that Al-Qaeda and obviously now ISIS has discovered America. So understand the nature of our problem. We're told we have to get it right 100% of the time. There are millions of illegal aliens in the United States. We don't know where they are. We don't know why they came here. And it poses a threat to our safety. It poses a threat to the survival of a country and the survival of Americans. And we keep seeing the same nonsense coming from both sides of the aisle. I don't think any of us, to be fair about this, this is a bipartisan issue. I hate both parties. The political parties are the enemy of the American people, folks. I don't know any other way of putting it. There are individual politicians, and we should support them irrespective of party. I don't care if they're with the Hopping Kangaroo Party. The question that politicians need to answer honestly and forthrightly and straightforwardly is, do you stand with America and Americans, or don't you? When a politician can tell you that we need to staple green cards onto the diplomas of foreign students, that politician should not be allowed to run for dog catcher. I will repeat this. Any politician who has the balls, the chutzpah, to talk about the need to staple diplomas, to staple green cards onto diplomas of foreign students needs to be removed from office by the electorate. That's the true term limit. The people of America need to go to the booth and dump them the way they flush the toilet after we relieve ourselves. My rage is in the stratosphere. We are cranking out more engineers than we need. There have been studies done about this. And again, the politicians hope we are stupid, ignorant fools. They talk about how we don't produce enough engineers in America because our schools are inadequate. And because our schools are inadequate, we need to bring in foreign high-tech workers. Okay, if that's the case, why is it that we're also told by the same politician lying out of the other side of his or her mouth that when those foreign students graduate from what are purportedly our inept and incompetent schools and get those degrees, we need to keep them because now they're qualified to take the jobs. How in the world could they be qualified to take the jobs if they just took a degree at a school that they now claim is incompetent to teach American kids? Think about it. Put the dots together. Let's connect the dots. We're going to take out our crayons and our coloring books. We're going to make believe we're members of Congress. They need crayons and coloring books in Congress. God only knows they can't read. They certainly don't want to read legislation when it lands on their desk, most of them. Some do, but many of them don't. They let their 26-year-old kids do it for them. But how can you make the claim that our schools lack the ability to crank out the engineers, scientists, and technicians, the STEM people that we desperately need, and then deliver a speech and say, you know what, when foreign students attend those incompetent schools, of course they don't call them incompetent then, we need to keep them here because they've been so well trained, we're losing the best and brightest that we just trained. Wait a minute. If the schools could turn these people from other countries into qualified programmers, engineers, and scientists, how could they then say schools are not capable of turning out Americans with the same skills? Are we genetically inferior to the rest of the world? When a politician says that we need to import the best and brightest, like our good friend Ted Cruz, and I use that word friend, really, really, really advisedly. We need to import the best and brightest. Ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you that I thought there was a way of describing the world's best and brightest. I thought we called them Americans. So you have politicians thumbing their nose at the citizens of this country whom they were elected to represent, and dare stand in front of cameras, and we are foolish enough to give them a round of applause, they should be getting raspberries and the one-finger salute. How in the world can you stand in front of the cameras as an elected representative of the citizens of the United States of America and make the statement that we need to import the best and brightest when we have such a high unemployment rate for American scientists and engineers? This is a betrayal of America. This is a betrayal of Americans. This is the destruction by design of the American middle class by the politicians, exceeding to the demands of the people that are making the campaign contributions. And the reason I single out Ted Cruz is because this is the guy who, to my knowledge, is singular, the only one who not only wants to do what comprehensive reform would have done, which is to have a two or three times increase in the number of H-1B high-tech visas, but he stood before Congress and announced that his amendment to S-744, the Comprehensive Immigration Reform Bill, Cruz 5, I call it cruising to disaster, would have a 500%, a five-fold increase in the number of H-1B visas. We'll go from 65,000 a year, which is the cap now, to 325,000 exceptional people. 325,000 exceptional people from around the world, anywhere but here? Really? Can you even find 325,000 exceptional people in the world? By the definition of exceptional, I want to know what Mr. Cruz thinks exceptional is, except perhaps what he really means is people who will work for exceptionally low wages under exceptionally abysmal exploitive conditions so that he can make people happy who he wants to make happy, and obviously it's not Americans seeking their thin slice of the American dream. And we need to be clear about the goal of our government. Not long ago, about a year ago, year and a half ago, I had a meeting with a former high-ranking member of immigration in Washington, the DHS, the Department of Homeland Surrender. And this guy had the chutzpah to say to me that I was old school, because I told him that in my judgment, America could never do well when Americans, by and large, don't do well. And he, you know, clucked his face at me, nodded at me, and said, "Oh, that's old school, Mr. Cutler. Americans don't need to do well for America to do well. American companies need to do well." Really? You mean the American companies that don't pay taxes in the United States, that import foreign workers, that export their factories overseas, those American companies? We are being betrayed by both parties. We're being betrayed by people who have lots of money. There was an interesting study done by some Ivy League colleges not long ago wherein they declared that we are no longer living in a democratic republic but an oligarchy where the wealthy are in control. It's estimated that 1% of America's population controls well over 30-35% of America's wealth. That's insane. That's insane. What makes America unique, or at least used to make America unique, was that we had the largest, most vibrant, most upwardly mobile middle class. You know, the old deal of anybody could grow up to be president, anybody could write the next success story. How in the world do you write a success story when Americans by the thousands are being laid off and we're being told that the solution is to bring in more workers? Over the past couple of weeks, 18,000 high-tech workers were laid off in Silicon Valley. And then we listen to the nonsense about unemployment rates, and we're told that there's a 6.2% unemployment rate. Never mind that we're not counting 100 million working-age Americans who allegedly have given up looking for work. I want to know, did anybody call those people up and say, "Hey, Jack, are you looking for a job? Hey, Barbara, are you still looking for work, or have you given up yet?" No one's asking these people those questions. They just write them off, and they say, "Oh, they're not looking for work, so we don't have to count them anymore. They want to be home. They're on permanent vacation." Bull. And then you have some programs where I've been watching, and it makes me red-hot angry, talking about lazy Americans, because the numbers of Americans on food stamps and disability has gone through the roof, so obviously Americans are now just lazy bums who want to sit home. Well, the rates have gone up two or three times since Obama came to office, by a factor of two or three. So you mean to tell me that double the number of workers became lazy in the last 8 years, people that have been working for the last 20, 25, 30 years, woke up lazy last week and said, "Oh, I'm going to go on disability. I'm going to go on food stamps." More likely, folks, these people woke up unemployed. They were laid off. They were fired, like those 18,000 high-tech workers. And they had to make a decision. You know, what do I do? How do I support myself? How do I keep my home from falling into foreclosure? How do I feed my children? The luxuries. And when I hear the newscasters making those statements, and you know that they're pulling down hundreds of thousands a year or more, and they could look down their noses. They sit there perched in front of the cameras and talk about the lazy Americans. I want to scream. My father was a construction worker. He was a tradesman. He was a plumber. And I believe that tradesmen are at least as valuable to America as anybody with a degree. I would argue they're more valuable. I mean, we really need more lawyers. We really need more bean-counting accountants. We need people who can do an honest day's work and build something. And build something. And I remember my dad coming home from work laid off because the bank wouldn't approve additional funding for a job he was on, or because they wrapped up the construction of a new building, and suddenly he had no job and might have been out of work for months at a time. And I remember that look he had on his face when he came through the door, and I remember my mother looking at him. He would nod at her, and tears would well up in my mom's eyes. And they died when I was in college, but I can't ever forget those evenings, those terrible evenings when my dad came home with that look. Because we knew that we were going to be eating tuna fish and pasta and all kinds of inexpensive meals, God knows for how long, until my dad was back at work. And I literally carried him off his job his last day at work when he was dying of lung cancer at age 57, in part because of his exposure to asbestos on the construction sites, and in part because he worked in the Navy shipyards during the Second World War. And we have Americans, not unlike my dad, losing their jobs today. Do you think they were lazy, or do you think that their job went away? And when their job goes away, you want to blame them for that? You want to blame them when companies bring in workers from other countries or simply ship jobs overseas when they're able to? You don't blame the victim. The American family, the American worker, are the victims of globalism, of the people who are so profoundly greedy that they don't give a damn what damage they do to America or Americans as long as they get their piece of the action. This is the mindset of a looter, and we're seeing it increasingly in this country. We are seeing it increasingly. And so when people tell you about the lazy people that are on disability or food stamps, really and truly, try to contain your anger, but make sure they understand that they don't have a clue as to what in the world they're talking about. Americans are struggling as they've never struggled since the Depression. And when they talk about job creation, they don't talk about the hourly wages, or perhaps the job is a part-time job rather than a full-time job. So the guy that loses his $100,000 a year computing job is now being told, be happy, we got a job for you working for $10 an hour somewhere. All jobs are not created equal. This is what we're confronting. But that's the economic side of immigration. But something that's at least as critical, I would argue far more critical, is national security. National security. Lindsey Graham has been all over the crisis in Pakistan and Iraq and elsewhere with terrorism, but particularly in Iraq with ISIS. And Fox News just reported shortly before my program let me pull this up for you. This is on the Fox News website. ISIS massacres 90 Yazidis in northern Iraq town, say the Iraqi officials. So the administration went out, the president went out yesterday and said, oh, the situation on the mountain is okay. It's under control. We don't need to rescue anybody. Meanwhile, 90 people were just slaughtered in Iraq, but everything is under control. This is like the captain in the Titanic saying, don't worry about the water flooding into your room. Don't worry that the boat is tilting 30 degrees. Just don't worry. Be happy. ISIS is an existential threat to the United States. They are so off the rails that Al-Qaeda threw them out for being too crazy. Al-Qaeda threw them out. This is a serious threat. And so you have Lindsey Graham out there. And Lindsey Graham, this is Fox News reporting last weekend. Graham, colon, I'm reading the headline. Islamic State will attack on U.S. soil. Obama must stop terror groups rise. Okay? That was Fox News. And this was last Sunday. And here is what he says. This is now a quote. South Carolina GOP Senator Lindsey Graham sounded the alarm Sunday about the growing threat of Islamic State launching an attack on American soil unless President Obama takes more decisive action to stop the terror group's surge across Iraq and Syria. Graham, a member of the Senate Armed Services Committee, told Fox News Sunday that the well-funded, swiftly strengthening organization, which has taken control of a large part of both the Middle East countries, is a direct threat to our homeland. Quote, Mr. President, be honest with the threat we face, Graham said. They are coming. Unquote. Okay. You may well be right. We've seen the videos where the members of ISIS stood there screaming, we're coming and we're going to attack you in New York and we're going to fly our flag over the White House. By the way, many of these ISIS leaders were in our custody and we released them. Insanity again. More insanity, the way we released criminal aliens, or the administration did, and the GAO and the OIG did studies and said this was a criminal act to release criminals into the community. We release terrorists into the world. We keep on releasing everybody. Catch and release on a global scale. Catch and release. And Lindsey Graham is there. They're coming. They're coming. They're coming. He's Paul Revere, one if by land, two if by sea. I once wrote a piece about that, and I said, goodness gracious, if Paul Revere was alive today and wanted to tell us the different ways the terrorists and the bad guys could come here, he'd need to buy more lanterns than you could buy at the local Lowe's or Home Depot and probably set fire to the Old North Church, stowing away on ships, entering with student visas, entering with tourist visas, entering under the visa waiver program, running the Mexican border, running the Canadian border. We can go on and on, the different ways of coming here. And once they come in, nobody looks to do anything with them except give them a green card, including Mr. Lindsey Graham himself. So the guy that's saying they're coming, they're coming, they're coming, will not say a word about securing the border, will not say a word about ending the visa waiver program, will not talk about the 9/11 Commission report. They're coming, they're coming, they're coming, said Mr. Graham. But here's what he doesn't say. This is the first paragraph and the preface of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. I'd like to know why Mr. Graham doesn't quote this, but I will. It is perhaps obvious to state that terrorists cannot plan and carry out attacks in the United States if they are unable to enter the country. Yet prior to September 11, while there were efforts to enhance border security, no agency of the U.S. government thought of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. Indeed, even after 19 hijackers demonstrated the relative ease of obtaining a U.S. visa and gaining admission into the United States, border security still is not considered a cornerstone of national security policy. We believe, for reasons that we discuss in the following pages, that it must be made one. Well, guess what, folks? Lindsey Graham and his buddies in the Senate and his buddies in the House of Representatives still don't think of border security as a tool in the counterterrorism arsenal. It is unbelievable. It is stupefying. It is infuriating. And it is dangerous and wrongheaded. Lindsey Graham thinks the solution to people running the border is to give them lawful status. So let's again go back to the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. This report, by the way, folks, was written by the attorneys and the special agents, FBI agents, immigration agents, and other federal law enforcement officials who worked with the 9/11 Commission to figure out what was going on, to gather the evidence, to get the statements, and so forth. And the 9/11 Commission was very clear about the danger of immigration and the failures of immigration that enabled the terrorists to enter the United States. But their staff, being perhaps a little bit less political, said, hey, you guys didn't go far enough on immigration, much as you talked about it. So they issued their own report, the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. I write about it extensively. I always like to include the link to these documents in what I write, because then you can read the document for my favorite price, and that price is free. It's available for free online. Doesn't get any easier or better than that. This is a volume of hundreds of pages detailing how the terrorists were able to move around the world, enter the United States, and hide in plain sight through the process that the 9/11 Commission referred to as embedding. So let's flip now to page 47 of that very same report. There is no ambiguity here, folks. Once terrorists had entered the United States, their next challenge was to find a way to remain here. Their primary method was immigration fraud. For example, Yusuf and Ajaj concocted bogus political asylum stories when they arrived in the United States. Mahmoud Abu Alima, involved in both the World Trade Center and Landmark plots, received temporary residence under the Seasonal Agriculture Workers Program after falsely claiming that he'd picked beans in Florida. Well, guess what? The Boston Marathon bombers, the Tsarnaev brothers, also got political asylum, apparently lying. In order to qualify for political asylum, you have to articulate a credible fear. If you send me home, I will face persecution or worse because of my race, religion, ethnicity, tribal affiliation, political orientation. You would not expect somebody granted political asylum to then go back to their country unless there was a major regime change. There's been no regime change in Russia. Yet the Tsarnaev family, as soon as they were granted authorization as political refugees, voluntarily went back to Russia. Nobody noticed. Nobody cared. And in fact, last December, the House Judiciary Committee conducted a hearing on how screwed up political asylum is. And actually, the House Judiciary Committee, in that hearing, made it clear that I'm right and any politician calling for any kind of an amnesty program is dead wrong. And I do mean dead wrong. It's a fatal mistake because it would allow terrorists opportunities. Because guess what? The subcommittee, or rather the House Judiciary Committee, the full committee, the chairman is Bob Goodlatte, made the point that members of the Mexican drug cartels had been able to deceive that system and get political asylum in the United States. So it's clear that anybody who's aware of that understands that there is no way, absolutely no way, less than zero, to be able to run a program with integrity that would involve millions of aliens whose true identities, backgrounds, affiliations, intentions, or even how they entered or when they entered the United States is unknown and unknowable, could not have a shred of integrity and would be the welcome mat for more criminals and international terrorists. Bob Goodlatte's hearing made it abundantly clear. There can be no such massive program without jeopardizing the lives of America and the national security of the United States. So any time you hear anybody from the House Judiciary Committees or subcommittees talk about any amnesty program, show them the hearing that Bob Goodlatte did, because Bob Goodlatte understands that there is no integrity to the immigration system. He knows, because he had the hearing. It's clear, it's on record, they gave political asylum to members of the Mexican cartels. Some of them were fleeing the violence of their competition, and some came here to carry out murders of their competitors who were in the United States. The hearing provides the clearest, most convincing and unequivocal evidence that any program that would give millions of illegal aliens lawful status would be to put every American's life on the line. Period. There is no discussion. There is no argument. It is irrefutable. That was the focus of the hearing. You'd be surprised to know that there are members of Congress, however, even after that hearing, who seem to think it's reasonable to talk about providing lawful status to millions of people whose presence in our country represents a violation of law, whose identities cannot be verified, and whose dates of entry and places of entry cannot be determined. So when you hear the nonsense, well, if they've been living here for 5 years and they've been paying their taxes, you know that the guy needs a nose job because he's a liar. Any politician who says that aliens who've been living here for 5 years paying their taxes need to be somehow accommodated is a liar. I am calling them out here. I will call them out every opportunity I get. That is a bald-faced lie, and they know better. They have to know better. Because it might sound nice, well, if they've been here for 5 years, first of all, we deal with sleeper agents who could stay in place for 10 years waiting for the phone call. But how in the world do you determine how long someone has been living here when we cannot, and they know that we cannot, possibly interview these applicants? There's no capacity to do a field investigation. So all the alien has to do, just like this guy, Mahmoud Abu Alima, is say, oh, I worked on a farm. And automatically, the keys to the kingdom are handed over. The doors swing open. You know, during the period of prohibition, they would say, well, you can go to the speakeasy where they sold, you know, illegal booze. Just tell them Charlie sent you and knock on the door three times or whatever the secret password is. So here the secret password is to say, I've been here for more than 5 years. In fact, I remember one day I was being driven into, I think it was Fox News, to do an appearance. And the driver engaged me in a conversation about immigration. He was from the Middle East. And I asked him how long he'd been living in the United States. And I played kind of dumb. I guess he didn't recognize my ugly mug. Even though I've done so many appearances on TV, most of these guys are busy driving 20 hours a day. They work hellish hours, a lot of these drivers. And I asked him, how hard is it for him to come here? He said, oh, I came during the Reagan thing. He said, you know, back then everybody knew the magic word was to say I worked on a farm. I guess just like Mr. Abu Lima. And in fact, as an agent, I participated in farm investigations. We had one little farm in upstate New York with so many aliens claiming that they worked on the farm. I mean, we're talking about thousands upon thousands of supposed farmers. If they all showed up to work on the same day, they would have been standing shoulder to shoulder, nose to nose, and it would have looked like a crowded New York City subway car during the rush hour. But they all claimed that they had worked there, and eventually we arrested a bunch of people. But a lot of people got away, and I don't know if it's 1 in 3, 1 in 5, or 1 in 100, by the way. So when we're told that if they've been living here for 5 years and paying their taxes, this isn't about paying taxes, folks. This is about immigration laws that are designed simply to keep people out of our country who pose a threat to our safety and well-being. That's what the inspector is looking for at that port of entry. It's that process that the guy that runs the border is evading because he knows or she knows that their name or something in their background would prevent them from entering the United States, and it has nothing to do with race, religion, or ethnicity. In fact, before I read one more paragraph from the 9/11 Commission staff report, I want to remind you that under our immigration laws, specifically Title 8 United States Code, Section 1182, and I'm not going to turn this into a law lesson, but I want you to know, unlike the immigration anarchists that we hear from all the time, routinely and very loudly, the immigration laws are the facts that we deal with. You know, John Adams said facts are stubborn things, and indeed they are. So let's consider the fact. Title 8, United States Code, Section 1182, deems the following categories of aliens to be excludable from the United States, not to be let in. And as I give you the categories of such aliens, I want you to ask yourself, how happy would you be living next door to somebody from another country who fell into one or more of these categories? Aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. Think about the Ebola virus. Think about resistant tuberculosis, polio, Chagas. We can go on. Okay, aliens with dangerous communicable diseases. First on the list, we hear so much about Ellis Island. Ellis Island was a quarantine station. It was run by public health and immigration, not even customs. It was purely or primarily public health and immigration that ran Ellis Island to make certain that we didn't have people come into the country who would make us ill. And families were unceremoniously split up when people were found to have terrible diseases such as smallpox, TB, or whatever. Second category, aliens who are severely mentally ill and prone to extreme violence. Aliens who are sex offenders. Aliens, obviously, who were previously deported become deportable if they try to reenter illegally. And by the way, I know we've been hearing this big lie, it's not a crime to run the border. An alien who's been deported and comes back is committing a 2-year felony just by crossing the border illegally. 2-year felonies are defined as crimes. And if the alien that runs the border to come back illegally was deported because of serious criminal convictions, the penalty runs to a maximum of 20 years in a federal prison. I think that a crime that calls for a maximum penalty of 20 years in jail is a crime by anybody's standard, and it's a section of law I'm very proud of. I worked with Senator D'Amato in the early 80s to get that law passed, and it did. And the consequence is that prior to this administration, Immigration criminal prosecutions were the most numerous for every U.S. attorney's district across the United States. So when they say it's not a crime to run the border, it's another lie. Their noses are growing. Send them to the plastic surgeon. Next, we get into aliens who are convicted felons, murderers, arsonists, bank robbers, rapists, white-collar criminals, aliens who are gang members, gun runners, human traffickers, drug smugglers. These are the categories. Aliens who are human rights violators, war criminals, spies, and terrorists. Is there anybody that I've described that you want to see move into that apartment next door to you? That's what the law is about. These are the laws that we're being told we shouldn't be enforcing. These are the laws that sanctuary cities refuse to do anything to enforce. I guess they don't care if terrorists or drug dealers or child molesters or people with dangerous diseases come into their cities because they have a political agenda, and your safety and the safety of your children and your families are not on their list. Not on their list. That's what these laws are about. And finally, aliens who are likely to become a public charge or if by working would take the job of an American are also to be excluded. That's the list. There's nothing in there about race, religion, ethnicity, or anything like that. It's purely about whether or not somebody entering the United States poses a threat to our well-being, and the politicians are willing to literally play Russian roulette with your life and the lives of the people important to you. That's how fundamental it is. They are playing Russian roulette with our lives and with national security so they can get political campaign contributions. And by the way, you should know that Zuckerberg and Gates and Silicon Valley have pumped between $1.5 and $2 billion into pushing for comprehensive reform, that the Chamber of Commerce is pumping millions upon millions of dollars into expanding the number of visa waiver countries to make it easier for criminals and terrorists to enter the United States, because after all, if they come here, they will take seats on the airplanes, they may go take in a baseball game or go to a hotel or buy some trinkets somewhere in a souvenir shop. And after all, that's a hell of a lot more important than keeping Americans safe, isn't it? That's what the laws are about. And so Lindsey Graham stands there, one of the eight gangsters, and he jumps up and down and says, "You better stop them because they're going to come here and kill us." Okay, and if they come here to kill us, what's your plan to secure the border, Lindsey? He doesn't have one because he doesn't care. Because if he had to secure the border, then suddenly, I guess, he'd worry that he might not get a campaign contribution or he would anger somebody who's promising him a block of votes. I mean, there's no reason. There's no sensible, rational reason that a supposed intelligent human being can tell people the terrorists want to come here and kill us and then not even mention anything about securing our borders or going back to the 9/11 Commission report to figure out what went wrong so it doesn't go wrong again. Is that an unreasonable request as a citizen of this country? That's the request we should all be making. I mean, the ideal thing would be for everybody to write a letter to Lindsey Graham and send them a copy of the 9/11 Commission report. Send them the link and say, what in the world are you talking about? Why are you willing to get Americans killed? You know, this isn't about the soundbite on the Sunday talk show because there's an election coming, so it sounds good. I don't care about the soundbite. I care about the reality. And the reality is that with an open border, we are at risk. The reality is that with an open border, terrorists are able to come here. The reality is that these programs that we keep hearing about, comprehensive reform, as you've seen from the 9/11 Commission staff report, would endanger us. And finally, let's get to page 98 of that report. And boy, oh boy, if this doesn't lay it out in crystal clear fashion, folks, I don't know. Check for a pulse. Check for a flatline EEG. This is page 98 of the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. Quoting, "Terrorists in the 1990s, as well as the September 11th hijackers, needed to find a way to stay in or embed themselves in the United States if their operational plans were to come to fruition. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status." By the way, folks, I'm going to interject. Think of the DREAM Act. Hundreds of thousands of illegal aliens up to age 31 were granted lawful status and identity documents without a face-to-face interview, without a real honest-to-God field investigation. Think of what 19 terrorists did to us, and realize that most terrorists tend to be no older than about 30-ish. The DREAM Act goes to age 31. They keep saying children, child, young people. No, they have to claim they came here as children, but they can be as old as 31 to file the application. What could possibly go wrong? But let me continue reading. I'll start with that last sentence again. As already discussed, this could be accomplished legally by marrying an American citizen, achieving temporary worker status, or applying for asylum after entering. In many cases, the act of filing for an immigration benefit sufficed to permit the alien to remain in the country until the petition was adjudicated. Terrorists were free to conduct surveillance, coordinate operations, obtain and receive funding, go to school and learn English, make contacts in the United States, acquire necessary materials, and execute an attack. Could this be any clearer to even somebody who's learning disabled? It is crystal clear that the ability to be able to embed themselves, to hide in plain sight, was essential for the terrorists, and yet there is no integrity to the process by which we're giving benefits to aliens. Benefits include a green card, lawful immigrant status, political asylum, United States citizenship through the naturalization process, or the ability to attend school. And now that we're talking about the ability to attend school, I received an article that blew my mind overnight. One of my former colleagues sent this to me, or actually it's a radio talk show host sent me an article. My friend Charles Heller, I'm on his program fairly frequently. He has a program in Arizona, and he sent me an article, and I did a little bit of checking and saw other articles on the same topic. And for this one, folks, I ask that you sit down and fasten your seatbelt. Fasten your seatbelt. If you have high blood pressure, take your pills. Take your pills. The Hill, for those of you not familiar with Washington, is an online publication. It's considered very credible. It is to politicians, I would say, what the Wall Street Journal is to businessmen. It's a credible newsletter. Here's the article, dated August 12, 2014. Representatives Jason Chaffetz, Republican from Utah, Trey Gowdy, Republican South Carolina, and Bob Goodlatte, Republican Virginia, chided the Obama administration for trying to lift a ban on Libyans coming to the United States to attend flight school or to study nuclear science. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? And here is the quote. It is unbelievable that this administration is willing to put Americans in harm's way by lifting a decades-old security ban on a country challenged by instability, Chaffetz said on Monday. This makes no sense. None. The lawmakers said the Office of Management and Budget, OMB, approved a regulation that allows Libyans to come to the United States for aviation and nuclear training programs. The Department of Homeland Security, Secretary Jay Johnson, could now sign that approved regulation. Think about that. Now, here's what Goodlatte said. The Obama administration is turning a blind eye to real terrorist threats that exist in Libya today by carelessly forging ahead with its plan to allow Libyan pilots and nuclear scientists to study in the United States. Goodlatte said, I urge Secretary Johnson to stop this dangerous plan from taking effect. And then the article goes on and says the ban was put in place in the 1980s after the Lockerbie bombing, where Libyans were responsible for a terrorist bomb that downed Pan Am Flight 103, killing nearly 250 people. And the Department of Homeland Security has said that it decided to review the ban after the Libyan revolution. I mean, this is crazy. And here's an interesting quote. DHS spokesman S.Y. Lee said, as part of an effort to help Libya to build its sovereign institutions, the U.S. is reviewing U.S. policies that have been in place since before the Libyan Revolution to see how they might be updated to better align with U.S. interests while maintaining the highest of standards of security. And he said that all potential students would still be subjected to a robust and thorough security screening before entering the United States. Now, the two lawmakers, or the three lawmakers, pointed out that just 2 years ago, the U.S. consulate at Benghazi, Libya, was attacked and four Americans were killed, including U.S. Ambassador Chris Stevens. So tell me, folks, in that chaotic environment that is Libya, how in the world do you do a meaningful background investigation on potential pilots and scientists who want to study nuclear physics in the United States? Do you not see the problem that we're facing? This is madness. This is madness. And then what people also don't understand is they'll say, well, when aliens come to the United States from England or France or Germany, everything is okay. Well, not necessarily, because they, those other countries, have lots of people that immigrate to England, to France, to Germany, from the Middle East, whether it's from Libya, whether it's from Pakistan, whether it's from Ethiopia. And most countries have a policy, as we do, that an alien who naturalizes can change his or her name and then get a passport that only reflects their new name. I can tell you of at least one case where a terrorist used the opportunity to become a U.S. citizen and acquire a new name and put himself basically in his own personal witness protection program and spent 4 years traveling around the world on a U.S. passport with a brand new name. This guy was a wanted international terrorist. We are leaving ourselves vulnerable because corporations are so eager to take down borders that they see as an impediment to the profits that they want to earn that they are willing to throw caution and innocent lives to the wind. The American people have got to wake up. The politicians need to understand that we're not as stupid as they hope we are. They have an agenda. And incredibly, their agenda is so short-sighted that they forget or don't want to think about the consequences that their actions might have on destroying America's national security or getting Americans killed. That's our fault. We, the people, have a responsibility to ourselves. We have responsibility to our country. And, folks, we have a responsibility to our children and to their kids to protect America, to make certain that we conduct ourselves in a sane and rational way. The final thing I want to talk about before we call it a night until next week, I want you to think about the language being used by the other side. We're told about compassion. 1 in 4 American children is now living below the poverty line. Many Americans believe that their children will not enjoy the same standard of living that they enjoy. Up until now, up until the recent years, each generation of American tended to do better than the parents did. Of course, it doesn't happen always, but that was the trend. Each generation did a little bit better. That's how we built the American dream. No more. Most people expect that they will not do as well as their parents did. Many parents are still taking care of their kids who are living at home because the kids have run up a ton of debt getting college educations but can't get jobs. That's not the fault of the student. It's the fault of our government for providing competition that we shouldn't be providing for our own citizens. Charity should begin at home. So there's a bunch of issues, but the accusations fly, and most Americans are decent people who don't like to confront those people who make accusations. It's the same tactic we saw in the schoolyards when we were kids, the schoolyard bully. And we're told, well, when kids get bullied, they're supposed to run for help. Maybe it's time we stood and had that argument with that big mouth next door or that neighbor that you meet at the mall. Let's have these conversations. They need to be peaceable. just as it says in the First Amendment, the right for peaceable assemblage, and it must be peaceable. No violence, no threats, no nonsense. But stand your ground. Be American. Standing up for ourselves is as American as apple pie. When we're told that it's anti-immigrant to want the laws enforced, it's as stupid as any argument that you could imagine, and I'm going to tell you why, and I'm going to tell you how to defuse the argument. Pay attention. This is important. It's impossible to be anti-immigrant if you favor enforcing the same laws that permit more than a million immigrants to legally come to the United States every year. America's immigration laws, contained within the Immigration and Nationality Act, certainly tell us who to keep out and who to kick out. Absolutely. And it comes back to public health, public safety, the well-being of American Americans. It makes sense. Kind of like the bouncer in a bar. So that makes sense. However, the immigration laws also tell us who to admit. And when we talk about a person with a green card, legally the term is lawfully admitted for permanent residence. LPR are the shorthand initials that immigration agencies use to describe such an alien. Well, when they talk about lawfully admitted, it means under the provisions of law. And what law are we speaking about? The laws that we want to see enforced. So the same laws that tell us who to admit and give green cards to are the laws that we want to see enforced, yet our opponents, lying through their teeth, because that's all they have going for them, are lies and accusations and bullying tactics, will say, oh, you're anti-immigrant. The answer is that we are not anti-immigrant, folks. We are pro-enforcement. Pro-enforcement. You never allow your enemy to define who you are. That's a huge mistake. That is, in a debate, the equivalent of being in a military confrontation and ceding the high ground to your opponents. Our immigration laws are fair. They are equitable. They are the most generous on the entire planet. In fact, America admits more lawful immigrants every year than the rest of the world combined. So how in the world is an anti-immigrant to stand by those laws that permit over a million lawful immigrants to be admitted legally into the United States every year? Those same laws allow more than a half million new American citizens to become citizens through the naturalization process. Those same laws enable us to provide political asylum to aliens who are at risk. Those same laws enable more than a half million foreign students to enter the United States every year. Those same laws enable tens of millions of non-immigrants to visit the United States every year. That's what the laws provide for. Those laws take a balanced approach. The open borders and anarchists, as they are, if what they really want to attain is anarchy, are making false accusations, and they need to be confronted. They need to be confronted every time they raise their voices and raise their heads. It's like the game of whack-a-mole. They open their mouths, and we bang them down with the truth. What I gave you today were quotes from the 9/11 Commission staff report on terrorist travel. This isn't something I made up. It didn't come from a supermarket tabloid. It involves a lot of common sense, but it also involves the findings and recommendations of the people who were tasked by our government to come up with an official report to make certain that we would never be attacked again. Two personal notes, if you will. This business about providing flight training for terrorists causes me to have a sense of deja vu all over again. In March of 2002, I believe it was around March 19th, but I don't have the date in front of me, I testified before the House Immigration Subcommittee on the issue of how two of the dead terrorists, Mohammed Atta and Marwan al-Shehhi, could have been granted authorization to attend flight school 6 months after 9/11. C-SPAN has a permanent video of that up on their website. I wish you would take the time to go watch it. You can go to my website, michaelcutler.net, capsweb.org. I believe the front page magazine article that I wrote has some links to it. Also, I've written a bunch of magazine articles. One of them, which I really want you to read at front page, by the way, is Border Security and the Immigration Colander, this notion that all we have to do is secure the Mexican border and all the other problems go away. That's like saying that if we sort of plug one hole in the bottom of a colander that you can use to drain pasta, that you can now use that colander with all those holes as a bucket to carry water, and magically the floor won't get wet. I mean, it's an absurd concept. It's all about the lies that we're being force-fed, and we need to confront those lies with the truth and with a little bit of common sense and with a little bit of critical thinking. The other postscript to these comments, May 20th, 1997, when I testified before my very first congressional hearing about how how terrorists had gamed the visa process and the immigration benefits program to attack our country twice in 1993, 4.5 years before 9/11. So here we go again. The warnings are out there. Lindsey Graham is screaming, hey, they're going to attack us. They're coming, they're coming, they're coming. And he's right. I think they are coming. I think they're probably here. And to say unless we beat them back, they're going to attack us is optimistic. There is absolutely no reason why they could not and don't send terrorists to carry out attacks on America as an intimidation tactic. For those of you who studied the Second World War, I know I've spoken about the Calais deception, how we convinced the Nazis we were coming through Calais rather than Normandy so that our valiant troops who suffered a bloodbath on the beaches of Normandy were still able to succeed ultimately and attack the Nazi positions. But there's another episode that's worth considering, and it was covered in a book, a movie, about General Doolittle called 30 Seconds Over Tokyo. In the early stages of the Second World War, how a bunch of U.S. bomber pilots took off from aircraft carriers, never happened before, and they stripped them down of everything. I mean, they even took the tail guns out of the airplanes because of the extra weight, and some of these guys stuck a broom handle through the opening so that if fighter pilots approached them from the enemy, you know, enemy fighter pilots approached, they would think there was a gun staring at them when all it was a broom handle. Because those planes had to be made super light and carry as much gas as possible, and they set off bombs in the middle of Tokyo during the early stages of the Second World War. It certainly wasn't a decisive blow for the Allies, but it was designed to demoralize our enemy. And if you don't think that the terrorists would love to do the equivalent to us tomorrow morning or next week or whenever, you're mistaken. We are vulnerable. And the purpose of terrorists is to do just that, carry out acts of terrorism to effect political change, to demoralize their opponents, to inflict fear. For Graham to say, unless we stop them, they will attack here, is foolish. The presumption must be made that just as these terrorists in those videos said that they will come here and they will attack us, if we're smart, we will take them at their word, and we will be prepared. And you should also know that when you're out there as an agent and you arrest illegal aliens, and I spent 30 years involved with that process, very often the people that run our borders are coming to do far more than just take that menial job. Very often we found aliens involved with serious criminal activities. You'd go look for the passport, the guy's house, which we were supposed to do to try to identify him or her, to, number one, properly identify the person, and number two, if the person was ordered deported, you need the passport to be able to deport them back to their home country. Well, as part of that process that we referred to as cleaning up the individual in custody, and cleaning up meant getting their identity documents and so forth, we would find weapons. We might find literature from a terrorist group or a criminal organization or an address book with names and phone numbers that were familiar because they were involved with either criminal or terrorist sorts of activities. But you have to be out there to do that. It's estimated that one in two or half of the FBI's 10 most wanted get arrested by police officers doing routine police work. You have to be out there to win the lottery. You know, you got to buy the ticket to be in the running. You have to be enforcing the law to be in the running to prevent bad things from happening. And in fact, in law enforcement, that concept of simply being out there and doing your job adds to it the added value, if you will, is something known as randomness. that just by the luck of the draw, you're going to stumble upon somebody, and by stumbling upon that person, you'll be in the position to stop something terrible from happening. We are not out there doing that. Any alien who enters the United States today knows that unless he or she is arrested by the police and is convicted, and even then there's some serious doubts, but at the minimum, that needs to happen in order for immigration to even begin to approximate an interest in the person. What this really means is that our immigration laws no longer exist in the real world. We no longer really have immigration laws when they are so widely ignored by local governments without consequences. And by the way, they are committing felonies because aiding, abetting, encouraging, inducing, harboring, shielding, transporting are all elements under the smuggling statute. Title 8, United States Code, Section 30, 1324 is a specific statute. This isn't a law lesson, but again, I just want you to understand that this is all fact-based. So you have states and cities declaring themselves openly to be sanctuaries. Basically, you could argue that they are harboring, shielding, aiding, abetting, encouraging, inducing. Yet the federal government takes no action against them. We are living in an upside-down world. We've lost most of our expectations of privacy and freedom in the name of national security. Yet the most common-sense measures to keep the bad guys from coming here, to keep the bad guys from being able to embed themselves, hide in plain sight, are not being done. They haven't been done for years, but under this administration, it has never been worse. We are literally and figuratively playing with fire. We are literally undermining national security and public safety. The election is coming. Politicians need to be made accountable. Any politician that says once we secure the border, we can deal with the people who are here, needs to lose his or her job. The only way that we deal with people who are here in violation of law, that false argument, we can't deport 11 million, we don't stop as a society more than a tiny fraction of a percentage of all of the people who speed, or all the people who might use that cell phone to text a message while driving. Think about that. How many municipalities have ratcheted up the penalties for drunk driving, ratcheted up the penalties and the efforts to identify people texting and driving? And I assure you that as bad as the immigration crisis is, and I don't believe we have 11 million, but probably 30, maybe 40 million illegals in the country, again, we don't know what we don't know. But we still have more Americans who are licensed to drive and who own cell phones than there are illegal aliens in the United States. And I have yet to hear a police chief or a mayor or a governor or any other official say, well, there's too many people with driver's licenses and cell phones to be able to do anything about people texting and driving. What they do is launch massive campaigns. It's a little bit of a psychological game. And they tell people, if you're caught texting and driving, terrible things will happen to you. And that's right. I think anybody who's stupid enough to text and drive should lose his or her license and maybe lose their freedom because they're putting people's lives on the line. However, again, I come back to the point. Law enforcement doesn't say that the numbers are too great for us to do anything about it. They tell everybody, we're going to look for these folks and make examples of them. But suddenly, when the issue becomes immigration, there's nothing in comprehensive reform that would provide for more agents. And I hear from my conservative friends, because I'm a Democrat, at least I'm registered as a Democrat. I vote as an independent, however, but I don't want to give up my vote in the primary, which is why I'm not an independent. They'll tell me about the wonders of Ronald Reagan. Reagan gave us the first amnesty and didn't hire a single new agent. The immigration crisis has been created and nurtured by the politicians from both sides of the aisle who want to have it both ways. They want to scream and do a rain dance over Obama and what Obama's not doing, but make damn sure that we don't hire more agents, make damn sure that the laws don't get enforced, make damn sure that that supply of cheap, compliant, exploitable labor and the customers and the students for the schools and all those other people that come here that reward the wealthy with more opportunities for more wealth, that they get what they want, while we get the short end of the stick. That's the game that's being played. If you're serious about violations of law, then you hire more agents and you crack down on the violations. They can't even, they the Gang of Eight, and they who purport to want border security will never talk about interior enforcement other than mandatory E-Verify, which is worthless when people are able to commit fraud and get the magic card that gets them through the E-Verify process. Immigration's a system. That's why I wrote that article about the colander. And we need to plug all the holes as best as we can and to convince those who would violate the law that we really are serious about our immigration laws. It would be good for national security. It would be good for American citizens. It would be good for public health. It would be good all the way around to help America and help Americans. This is the mission that I give all of you this evening. Please go out and attend those town hall meetings. You know, the newspapers said that Congress is on vacation, so they're not doing their job. In point of fact, when members of Congress are back in their home districts, hopefully, they're having town hall meetings and meeting with their constituents. Make the phone call. Call your congressmen. Call your senators. Try to arrange a meeting. Try to meet, if not with the actual member, with their staff. And by the way, if you have a member of Congress who refuses to have town hall meetings, they need to be removed. I don't care who they are. I don't care. A town hall meeting is the equivalent of a person sitting down with his boss for a conference. When I was an agent, if my boss said to me, Mike, 9 o'clock tomorrow morning, you know, come into the office, we're heading to the conference room for a discussion, you wouldn't dream of not coming in for that discussion. That's what this is the equivalent of. I want to remind you again, those folks in Washington, those folks in City Hall, and those folks in your state capitals work for you. And if they're not willing to sit down and meet with their employer, you're the employer, then you need to fire them the way that you would if they were an insubordinate employee, because indeed, any member of Congress that refuses to listen to his constituent or her constituent is insubordinate. They have to listen to you. And you need to be willing to go out there and get them to listen. In fairness to them, if you don't tell these elected representatives how you want to be represented, they can't do it. We don't go to restaurants and tell the waiter, serve up some crap and whatever you put on the plate, I'll be happy to eat it. We're generally very specific about the food that we want to eat and the way we want it to be prepared. We need to be no less specific when dealing with our elected representatives. It's more than simply voting, folks. You need to engage these people in a conversation. You need to sit down with your neighbors, and you need to get your voices heard. It's not an easy assignment, but if you have children and you worry about their future, if you thought it was important to send your kids to college, if you thought it was important to get that math tutor or that science tutor, well, this is no less important, because if our country continues down the wrong path, I don't even want to imagine what the future of our children will look like. This is part of good parenting. So please take your responsibilities as a parent as well as your responsibilities as a citizen seriously. And that begins by doing your best to get this government of ours to represent the best interests of America and Americans. Please visit my website, michaelcutler.net. capsweb.org. Check out Front Page Magazine. I also have an article shortly, I believe, that will be published in American Currency, C-U-R-R-E-N-T-S-E-E, American Currency Magazine, which is a publication of the Washington Times and was founded by Dr. Ben Carson and edited by Armstrong Williams, an amazing broadcaster and someone that I'm looking forward to working with come September on Sirius XM Radio. So those are the commercials, if you will. You've got your marching orders. I want you all to please remember, democracy is not a spectator sport. Have a great weekend, everybody. Look forward to seeing you again, same time, same place, right here on the Michael Cutler Hour, Friday evening. Good night, everybody.